Hello, everyone. Welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and on the other end of the microphone is John Steele. John, how are you?
Hi, Stuart. We are recording on consecutive days this week. It's pretty special, pretty exciting.
Well, this is less than 12 hours since we last spoke, right? So,
indeed, yeah.
A lot has happened since...
We don't live in the same house.
A lot has happened since then, though. I've had breakfast and I watched the first quarter of the Super Bowl. I should say we are recording while Super Bowl 54 is in play. I am not watching it because I've been banished to another room in my house. And quite honestly, I want to focus on J2. So no checking your phone, John, to see how the Chiefs and the 49ers are doing, all right?
Did you see that the image that I tweeted you earlier where it's like a guy saying pushing occurred after pushing time was over, progress is cancelled?
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Here we are. No phone checking for me. Don't worry.
No phone checking. Good. Before we get started on this J2 preview, I should say a lot of the information that I'm basing this talk on is stuff that I've put into my J2 preview, which is now live because Big Ben put it up on the Patreon page. And yeah, you can have access to this J2 written preview. It's in a lot more detail and a lot more stats and facts and analysis and whatever. All you have to do is become a subscriber or donate to the podcast on Patreon. There'll be a link. I've put a link on my Twitter feed. I know John has done as well. Ben has done it as well. So this podcast is going to be a preview of the upcoming J2 season. But if you want a little bit of extra kind of context and detail, do yourself a favor and become a subscriber on Patreon, and you'll get kind of lots of extra kind of free stuff and more detailed stuff that we can't talk about on the podcast, John. So we covered a little bit in the previous pod that we did. We just did a brief overview of kind of the J2 season. We're going to go into a little bit more detail in this podcast, and I think the first place we're going to start, John, is the two teams that have joined us from the holy grail of J1. Last year, Jubilo Iwata and Matsumoto Yamaga were relegated from the top tier. Both of them, I didn't look at them expressly, but at times they look pretty pathetic in J1. Matsumoto Yamaga couldn't really score goals. I mean, their top scorer last year had 3 league goals, which is borderline ridiculous when you think about it. And Jubilo have been kind of on the slide since Hiroshi Nanami kind of decided that he wasn't going to play any defense or whatever he decided to do. This year, John, both teams have gone through varying degrees of change. Players, managers, whatever. What do you see, or what can you envisage from these two teams?
Good question. I think just looking at the fact that there's quite a high turnover of players, certainly at Matsumoto, to a lesser extent at Iwata as well, I think I do get the sense that while they will be competitive and probably top six material, the league might be quite wide open this year at the top. I don't see either of these two being a kind of runaway, 100-point, 100-goal champion like we've had from, say, you know, FC Tokyo in the past when they've been relegated. I think for Matsumoto, talking about them first, last time they've yo-yoed between J1 and J2 a couple of times, haven't they, in recent history. And the last time they came back down, they didn't really change anything. So it was very much a case of, meet the new boss, same as the old boss kind of thing. It's going to be very different, as we know, this time, because they're changing wholesale in terms of playing staff and a new manager as well. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how quickly that comes together. At the moment, it's a bit kind of like Matsumoto in name only, isn't it? So it'd be interesting to see how they play and how quickly they gel. For Iwata, I think they've probably got the most pleasingly... They've got the manager whose name most pleasingly sounds like the team name in Fernando Jubero. Well, I guess it's probably Hubero, but let's not spoil the illusion. But yeah, again, I think it's their playing staff hasn't had quite the same turnover that Matsumoto have. But I do think they, as you said, at times in J1, they look pretty dreadful. I still think of Iwato as being, and it's a cliche, a kind of J1 powerhouse, because that's what they were in the early days of the J League when I started to get interested. And I genuinely thought after they went down to J2 and slummed it for a little bit and came back, they would make sure that they never got relegated again. But that obviously didn't go very well, and they're back down in the second tier again. So yeah, I see both of these teams being strong and competitive, but I don't see them hitting the ground running necessarily in February and March, April. And I don't see either of them running away with the league. I think this would be a good season for a kind of third column sort of team to sneak up the table, the likes of a Fukuoka, for example. I don't know, what say you, Stuart?
Well, I'm just a bit taken aback that Fukuoka have been tipped to storm the table. But I think of these two teams, I think Jubilo look better, and I think on paper they have the better kind of lineup. I know they've lost Kengo Kawamata and Adalton, but they had two strikers who were out on loan at J2 clubs last year. They had Koki Ogawa, who's at Mito, who played really well, Seiya Nakano, who was at Fajiano Okayama. I think bringing those two back will be very good for Jubilo, and their experience last year in J2 will kind of give them a leg up on what to expect as well. I think for Matsumoto, I think there's been you said it right there, it's in Matsumoto in name only. I mean, if you look at the lineup that's probably going to start the first game, and you look at the lineup from the team that started the previous game, which was the last game in J1, there'll be a huge turnover. There's a new manager, there's a new captain, there's a new striker, there's new midfielders, and it's a very different, it looks a very different kind of Matsumoto Yamaga, and I wonder how long that will take to kind of establish itself. The manager is good. I put in the preview, he's good but unheralded, because he did a really good job with Gunma and Keijiro Nunes, who I'm talking about. I wonder, Sorimachi is a very difficult guy to follow, just not because Sorimachi was that good. He was a good coach, but he wasn't a great coach. But just that he was there for a long time, and comparisons are obviously going to be made with Sorimachi's Matsumoto. And yeah, it's I don't know. It's I think Jubilo will be there or thereabouts, but I'm not so optimistic about Matsumoto. I think if they get in the top six, they'll do well. A season like Nagasaki or Niigata, when they were relegated from J1, is in the offing for them, I believe. Unless their new signings can inject the goals that they need, as they've signed Jael from FC Tokyo. They've still got Serginho there, who's a really good player as well. But yeah, I'm not too sure about Matsumoto Yamaga this year. I think a mid-table, maybe somewhere between 6 and 10, is in their immediate future, I think. Yeah, so those are the two teams that were relegated last year. In the playoff places last year, we had Omiya, Tokushima, Van Fore and Montedio Yamagata. John, out of these, three of them kept their manager, and one of them, Montedio Yamagata, lost their manager to Vegalta Sendai. But of these four teams, what stands out for you with regards to the squads?
Yeah, I think, again, to sort of pillage liberally from your written preview, Omiya have made a few changes, but I'm not sure they're stronger than last season. So I think, again, they'll be there or thereabouts, but still with a few question marks. For Tokushima, we talked about it a bit last night, and I think I got my Naokis and my Naotos mixed up, because they lost Naoki Nomura, haven't they? He's gone to Oita.
Yes, yes.
But Naoto Kami Fukumoto, my favourite goalkeeper, has come in from Tokyo Verdy. Yeah, he's obviously, he's been really good at Verdy. Goalkeepers don't always kind of maintain their cult status or their importance to the team when they move.
Mm.
But I think if he can do that, he, I would argue, is an upgrade on Yuji Kajikawa, who was also a good goalkeeper last season for Vortis. So I think, yeah, we sort of know what, in the same way that we don't know what we're going to get, maybe playing style-wise, from Iwata and Matsumoto, we do know what we're going to get from Tokushima,
because
they'll play the Ricardo Rodriguez way. Losing Jordy Bice, obviously, problematic for them as well, I think. I know he was only on loan. It'll be interesting to see. Vortis have had to kind of regenerate a couple of times, haven't they? Because remember when they lost, for example, a player like Daiki Watari,
yes,
who's kind of the talismanic forward, and it was interesting to see how they adapted their playing style around not having him. So I wouldn't necessarily say that they're ruled out of contention this time. I think they could be up there. Kofu, I'm not sure. I thought the way they approached the playoffs was interesting. They kind of sort of, it was a bit of a kicking match, wasn't it?
It was.
They played against, was it against Tokushima? They were.
Yes.
They were rough. Yeah, just the tactics that they had going into that game, I didn't think were right. So I think that and losing Peter Utaka, obviously, who's gone to Kyoto, is a big, going to be a big miss for them. So I'm not sure, again, similar to Omiya in a sense, I'm not sure they're stronger than last year. I mean, Junior Barros, you can probably speak a little bit to in terms of his goal threat. Didn't do much at Gifu, obviously, last year. So, yeah, I think there's question marks about them as well. And, Montedio Yamagata, as you mentioned, they've had to change manager because Takashi Kiyama has moved on to Sendai, a chance in J1 that I think he's earned over the last couple of years with his J2 exploits. But that means that, we are not sure what to expect from them. So again, just riffing on the same theme, I do think we're seeing it's too early to comment on the quality of the league because we haven't seen any actual matches. But in terms of the squads of the newly relegated teams from J1 and the remainder of last season's sort of top six playoff contenders, I don't see anything that would scare me if I was a Okayama manager or Fukuoka manager, to name check them. I think it could be, certainly the early months could be quite wide open this year.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think that there are some interesting kind of wrinkles in these teams. I think Omiya have brought in Eastern Europeans because that's what Takeo Takagi likes to do. They've brought in a foreign goalkeeper, which I think we spoke a little bit about last night. Foreign goalkeepers don't tend to kind of sit on the bench and twiddle their thumbs or whatnot. I think who did we speak about last night? Mateus, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm. But Omi have brought in, who they brought in? Filip Klajic, yeah. So they brought him in from Serbia. They've got a Latvian defender called Maximenko, and they've got Nerman Haskic up front as well. So they've got a power unit, I think, and I think that's what they're going to go for. I think they're going to go for a physical approach. They lost Juanma, who went to Avispa Fukuoka. I think we'll talk about them later on. Robin Simovic isn't there anymore, so I think this is more of a Takagi squad. I think it's a physical one. I think it'll be
more rugged.
Yeah, they won't be outrun. They won't be outfought. I don't know how the quality is compared to what they had last year, but they'll be there or thereabouts. I agree
like we were saying, that this might be a good season to be rugged and physical as opposed to freewheeling fancy dannery.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, Vortis will kind of listen to that and say, well, no, because we're just going to play football. They brought in some good, if kind of under the radar players. Those two players they brought in from Tochigi, Nishiya and who's the other one, Hamashita. Like, you kind of think, if I said to you, "Oh, we're going to bring in the two creative players from Tochigi," and you'd say, "What?
what creative?
What are you talking about?" But actually, those two players were actually really good, and I think in an attacking system, when they get given the license to create and to move about and to kind of influence the play further forward, I think they'll do really well. Corfu, I don't see it this year from them. Although I'm interested to see how Izumisawa does, because they've brought in Jin Izumisawa from Yokohama. He's Yokohama, right? He's contracted to Yokohama, but
yes, on loan from Gamba. Is that right?
Possibly. I don't know. Something like that. But back in the day, he was a good player, but I haven't seen him play for a while.
I think he was the best player in J2 in the season.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, were very strong. So yeah, it's kind of been disappointing how his career has not progressed at all since then.
Yeah, I wonder how old he is now. I probably should have researched that. But I think if Corfu are just expecting Junior Barros to step into Peter Utaka's role and score 20 goals, that's just not going to happen, I don't think. And not only did they lose Utaka, they lost Utaka Sonida as well, who played as a really good second striker. I know they've got Dudu coming back, but he's a little bit injury prone, or he was at the end of last year. And so to lose Sonida and Utaka is kind of a difficult thing to overcome. They're Corfu, so they'll be there, I think. But yeah, it's difficult to say that they're better than last year, because I don't think they are. I think Montelli are a bit of a wild card, because we genuinely don't know what kind of system their new manager Kiyotaka Ishimaru is going to play. They lost Tatsuhiro Sakamoto, the rookie who had a really, really good year last year, the attacking midfielder. He signed for Seretso in the winter. I don't know, they brought in Atsutaka Nakamura, who his name might be bigger than his game these days, but you would think in J2 he's going to be a really good kind of attacking player. I mean, he's approaching 30 now, but he's going to have a lot of skills in his locker to unlock J2 defenses. And so I think all the playoff teams have real big question marks against them, and so I think that, yeah, like you mentioned earlier, with the two teams that come down and with the kind of bunching up of the league in it, well, at least on paper, I think we're going to have like a real kind of battle royale for the top two and the playoffs. And speaking of the playoffs, like, a lot of teams on the outside looking in last year, Mito, Kyoto, Okayama and Niigata, they rounded out the top 10 last year. Out of those teams, John, who do you see as kind of the ones who are going to make a big kind of playoff / promotion push?
I think you are feeling Niigata, aren't you? You mentioned before we
pressed. Yeah, I think that, but just to kind of frame that, they have lost Leonardo, and it is difficult to replace 28 goals, and they did lose what's his name, Sachiro Toshima, the midfielder, but they brought Romero Frank in, who's really good and experienced. They've still got Kawe. Michael James is still there at the back. I'm interested to see who this new guy Pedro Manzi is, who's the kind of obvious replacement for Leonardo. Manzi comes in from Chennai in the Indian I League, I think it's called, and he scored 23 and 22 last year, and so he knows where the goal is. Obviously the J League is probably a step up from the Indian I League, he says, without kind of knowing a lot about the Indian football scene. But I don't know, they look like they could have goals in them, as in goals from a variety of sources this year. They've also brought in Yuki Omoto, who I loved since he was at Gifu, but he's never really been fit. But when he is fit, he's just a live wire dynamo down the right hand side. And I think if they can kind of blend all their foreign signings and the new coach gets his message across, I think Niigata will be an interesting team this year.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be dull watching them. It certainly wasn't last season. We were never quite sure which version of Niigata was going to turn up, especially in the first half of the season. I think as well, I've mentioned, is his name Silvinho, the sort of the bald Brazilian midfielder?
Why are you saying bald?
Just to identify him, just to differentiate him from other
Silvinho is
non-bald players, more hirsute individuals.
Yeah, Silvinho's still there. They've got quite a lot of foreign players actually.
Yeah, he has the potential to be a key player, I think, this year, because that link between the defence and the forwards is very important. I think, in just the way that Japanese teams tend to play the transition, if you will, he could find himself with a key role. I'm not sure how much we can expect from Pedro Manzi, who I think sounds more like a hairdresser or a football agent than a striker. But we'll have to see. I don't know. I think if they can gel, if they can click, then they could move further up the table than the 10th place they finished last year. But Spanish manager's an interesting call, so we'll see.
Yeah, also, I mean, it would be remiss of us not to talk about Kyoto. I think we spoke a little bit about them on the pod last night, so we won't kind of go over old ground too much. But just to kind of review, I think they've got a real good chance for promotion this year. I think the way that this league is bunched up, I think the players that they've brought in will be good in this particular kind of setup for J2. They are fighters. They are I'm trying to think of a nice way to say. You said shithouses last night. I'm going to say experienced in the dark arts of football.
Malicia,
that's the word I look for. They are experienced to the point of knowing what to do and what not to do and when not to do it, if you know what I mean. And I think that I think that they'll be looked upon as one of the favourites as well. You can't bring in all these big names, big for this level, and not expect to be placed at the forefront of people's expectations. And obviously the new stadium thing is going to put a lot of expectations on them as well. But I think their recruitment policy this year has been done with that in mind. I think they have brought in a couple of university graduates, I think, but by and large, they've brought in experience. You know, we talked about it last night. Peter Utaka, Jordi Boyce, Moriwaki, Tadanari Lee, Yutaka Sonoda. And they've still got people there from last year. Yoshihiro Shoji is still there. And while they have lost a lot of dynamism, I think they're making it up and possibly kind of profiting on the experience level. And I think that Kyoto will be one of the favourites for promotion after having finished outside the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I think from the group of four teams that we're talking about right now, so Mito, Kyoto, Okayama, Niigata, I also think Kyoto got the best chance of breaking into the top six, possibly even higher. I think that's partly due to the fact that they have lost players but done a good job of replacing them transfer-wise, at least on paper. And the new stadium, I think, could go either way. It could be give them a boost, or it could be a millstone if they, you know, start there poorly and lose games. I think they'll be, Kyoto are kind of ideally placed to be the beneficiaries of what I think is a weaker top 10 than last season at the moment, as it stands.
Yeah, you won't find any argument there from me. I think, and it's going to sound a bit sad to say this, but Mito Hollyhock did really well last year, but I don't see it this year. In fact, I'm quite worried for them. They had such a good year last year. In fact, it was almost too good in the fact that they played so well that other teams have decided to cherry pick their biggest assets. I think, yeah, obviously they've lost manager Hasebe, who's gone to Avispa Fukuoka. And yeah, in the preview that I wrote, there's a huge list of players that have left. I mean, I'm not going to go through all of them because it will take me half an hour, but they've lost Hiroyuki Mai, who's gone to Fukuoka with Hasebe. They've lost Koki Ogawa, who's gone back to Jubilo. Atsushi Kurakawa, who's gone back to Omiya. There's a lot of other players as well, and like, Mito are not a club that can, or I don't think Mito are a club that can kind of survive those kind of huge kind of departures of talent. They've got a new manager, of course, Tadahiro Akiba, who was, I think before Mito, he was working at the National Football Coaching Center, or he was part of the Japanese national team setup, I think. And they've brought in a lot of young players, a lot on loan, a couple from Marinos, one from Kashima. But I think I would be, yeah, I don't think they'll finish seventh. In fact, I don't think they'll finish in the top half of the table. I think a more kind of a more regular looking Mito in 14th or 15th is on tap for them this year, I think. But yeah, you can't lose all of those players and expect to, as well as a highly respected manager, and expect to replicate the performance that they did last year, I think.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I think pretty much of the list of departures is every single player who I kind of associated with the good things that Mito were doing last season, and the manager is included in that as well, Shigetoshi Hasebe. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, on the flip side, for argument's sake, they kind of came from nowhere a little bit last season.
Yep.
With players that we hadn't heard of, who suddenly became integrated very deeply into a kind of Mito sort of DNA, if you like. If that can be replicated this season, then they might be okay, and they might surprise us like they did last year. But I totally agree with you. I think it's sort of an inverse Matsumoto problem. I think at Matsumoto, Sorimachi stayed for too long. That actually kind of unpicking the kind of DNA of that club is going to be very difficult for the new manager to do in a short space of time. I think Mito is going to have the problem of the opposite way, is that Hasebe probably wasn't there long enough, and the players that form the nucleus of that kind of very, probably my favourite team to watch last year actually, have all gone a bit too quickly, and most of them were on loan, so that in a sense they were never really Mito in the first place.
Yeah.
So I just don't know how that's gonna gel. Again, they might benefit from the fact that the top half of the league looks wide open at the moment. But I agree with you. I think it's almost unfair. And I think if I was in the front office there, I'd probably have sat down with the new manager and said, look, you get a free hit for this year. This is a Verdi post Lottina situation.
Yes.
Like we know that basically we're giving you like the Lego set, but most of the bricks are missing. Kind of thing. So just do your best to make sure we don't get relegated, then we'll go again the following year. I mean, that sounds very negative, but I think it's definitely better to be on that. We've got to be realistic when you look at the list of players that have left.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Okay, John, we're going to take a bit of a break here. There's been a lot of information passed in this particular part of the podcast, so we'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to look at the mid-table to see which teams we think could rise from the mid-table into prominent positions. And also, we are going to look at which teams are going to be battling against relegation. So join us after the break. Welcome back to the pod. John and I back, and we're going to talk about teams in J2 that finished in the mid-table last year, and what their prospects are for either going up in the table or if they're looking down in the table. I think, John, probably a good place to start is Avispa Fukuoka. Now, they finished 16th last year. They had a, I think it's fair to say, a woeful time in 2019. They started off with Fabio Pecchia. They brought in Kido as well. They were pretty crap last year, if we're not going to sugarcoat stuff. But they have a lot of reasons for optimism this year, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think we can say, not with certainty, because we don't really deal in certainty on the pod, but if they hadn't have had Cervantes, the Spanish goalkeeper, in such fine form for the majority of last season, I think they would have been relegated. Or they certainly would have finished lower than the 16th place they eventually ended up in. I think the biggest sign in, if you like, in inverted commas, is the fact that they've got Cervantes back again for this season, which this is similar to the Genki Omai transfer to Kusatsu, where you read it a few times and you still don't believe it. I'm amazed that Cervantes has wanted to commit to another season at Fukuoka without sort of therapy and counselling attached after some of the defending in front of him last year. So that's a really big boost for them to have him back. Obviously, they're bringing in probably one of the manager of the season contenders from last year in Shigetoshi Hasebe from Mito. I think all of the players that they brought in are kind of good to go. You know, Solomonson in defence, Hiroyuki Mai also from Mito in midfield, Juanma from Omiya as well. They're all proven, you know, players who can do it at this level, maybe even higher. So I think it would be poor punditry to just say that they're going to do better than last year. I think that's obvious because they probably couldn't do this. But yes, I think they will be much more competitive and much higher up the table than they were in 2019.
Completely agree. I think they're good enough to be in the playoffs. I think keeping Cervantes, as you said, is a huge move for them. I think Juanma's better than Yan Donghyun, who was their kind of main talisman last year. I don't think it bothers me that Ricky Matsuda is gone, because I think, yeah, he's overrated. And I think the players that they've brought in, Fukumitsu, Solomonson, Hiroyuki Mai, as you just said, I think they'll and they'll get Daisuke Ishizu back as well. He was injured for the majority of last year with a serious knee injury. And so I think Avispa, I think one player they will miss is Wando Jay. He's gone back to Korea. I think he's gone to Ulsan Hyundai, probably posed in front of a digger or a boat or a crane or something like that, as Ulsan Hyundai players do when they go back. But I think what you said about players being good to go, I think is really, really crucial, because as we mentioned in the first part, there's a lot of players at teams such as kind of Omiya, such as Corfu, such as Matsumoto, Jubilo, that we don't know. We don't know what they're going to be. We don't know how long they're going to take to acclimatise, don't know how long they're going to take to adapt, if they even will adapt. But I think what Hasebe has done, he's identified players that he either knows or he knows will work in the division. And I think that recruitment is kind of a reflection on Hasebe, actually. He seems like a thorough person. He doesn't leave a lot to chance. He's got his eye on the ball all the time, and he did a remarkable job with Mito last year, and it would not surprise me to see Fukuoka finish kind of in the top six this year, something that he just missed out on with Mito. But I think there's a good chance he will do that in 2020. So yeah,
I think speaking as a video game nerd, the analogy for me would be that when I look at Fukuoka's the squad that's been assembled there, I feel like it's like buying a PlayStation 4 with a game in the box. You know, you open it and you've got the console, you've got the game, you've got all the cables, you've got the controller, literally within 30 seconds of plugging everything you can go. Whereas I feel like Mito, Matsumoto, a couple of other teams this year, some of the new players, Omiya, for example, it's more like you've decided on a whim to like build a PC from scratch and you've ordered some components from Amazon, but you're not sure exactly what's going to be, what you're going to get, and whether it's going to be compatible, or, you know, what kind of drivers you're going to need. I wouldn't be surprised if early on in the season you see Fukuoka near the top of the table, just because, like you say, they've got players who can literally are ready to go at this level, whereas I think some of the other teams are going to take time to gel and settle.
Well, if that was your analogy for Vispa Fukuoka, I can't wait to hear what your analogy is for Jeff United.
It's just a garbage truck on fire rolling really slowly down a hill.
But is it this year? Because we spoke a little bit last night about it. Yoon Jung-hwan is the manager now. They I think one of the first things he started to do was start training at 6:30 in the morning, which is I'm sure the players were very happy about that. But that's what Jeff United need, right? They need someone to come in and say, "Oi, you, get your shit together and start doing stuff that you're being paid to do." And I think that, like three training sessions a day, which is what they, I don't know if they're still doing it, but it's what they were doing at the start of the preseason, is a very nice introduction into what Yoon Jung-hwan is going to have in store for them, I think. They've got a new goalkeeper. We hope he doesn't go down the route that most Jeff goalkeepers do, because it's Shota Arai. He came in from Kawasaki Frontale last year. They need a good goalkeeper. They need a goalkeeper not to be a complete head case as well. We spoke a little bit last night about Kengo Kawamata, but they've also brought in Taguchi Taishi. He was from Jubilo as well, was he?
Yes, I think so.
Via Nagoya. I mean, as usual, the component parts are there, but it just needs someone not to be an idiot in order to make them function, right?
Yeah, I think I might cop some flack for this, maybe even from you or other listeners, but I'm happy to debate this. I think we do have a rare case here where Jeff have gone out and they've hired literally the best manager available for the job.
You're not going to hear any kind of complaints from me about that.
Yeah, because normally, you know, you normally would have that conversation like, oh, if only Yoon Jung-hwan was available, we could get him. And then they're literally like, oh, he's just, that's him on the phone now. He wants to come and do the job. So I think everything is there for success. As we know in the J League, particularly with Jeff, just because everything is there yeah. to be successful doesn't always follow. But I've always thought Jeff is one of these places where, you know, to sign players, I mean, selling them on the club is easy. The training facilities are great. The stadium's great. Chiba is not the most exciting place to be, but there are exciting places, but very easy drive and commute in terms of, you know, the greater Tokyo sort of area. I think if we extend the video game analogy just one more step, this season's Jeff is going to be like people hoping that the goalkeeper AI is finally fixed with this year's FIFA or something. Shota Arai might find himself playing a few more games than he has done at Kawasaki in the past. I don't know. If I really do feel like it's not exactly the last chance saloon, really, but if a manager like Yoon Jung-hwan cannot extract more from those resources than other managers have done in the past, then I really think it's time to question sort of what Jeff are doing, you know, in a more existential sense, because they do have the players in the squad, they have the facilities, they have the stadium, the fan base. God knows they have the fans, although in dwindling numbers as they also lose hope season on season. I mean, that was the best tweet I saw from the end of last season. It was a Kashua fan saying, you know, Jeff had been in JT for 10 years. In that time, Kashua have been relegated, been promoted, won J1, been relegated again, and been promoted again. And it's like, yeah, it's almost beyond parody at this point. We'll see. I don't think it'd be. It's hard to imagine. J2 is probably one of the leagues where you could go from 17th to top six in one season. So it's not impossible. But I think most Jeff fans are just hoping that they have a solid, organised, hard-working team that just doesn't just play when the going is good, and then the heads go down immediately when things go wrong. I think if you can get to that base, which I think is what Yoon demands usually from players, if you think about his time at Tosu, for example, then I think that's a good base to start from. But yeah, they're very similar to Fukuoka, I think, and that last season was so disappointing that it almost defied analysis, really. They will be better this year, and I'm sure much better. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see how many of Yoon's methods can be got across in the few months he's been there.
Yeah, rather like Niigata, it won't be dull, I don't think. I think there'll always be something to look at with Jeff and with Yoon Jung-hwan especially. Other teams in the mid-table, John. So last year, kind of other teams like Fajiano Wakayama, Nagasaki, Kanazawa, Ryukyu, Tokyo Verde, those kind of teams. Anything stand out with regards to those teams, whether you think these teams are going up or going down, or like, does anything stand out for you?
I think Nagasaki will be similar in terms of style. Obviously, having Victory Barbo for the whole season could help them forward-wise, because they've lost Hiroto Goya, haven't they, to Kashiwa. Yes. Kashiwa have literally bought one good player from every two team. It's almost unfair. yeah, I don't know. We were talking before we recorded, so I'll let you take Kanazawa, because I know you think they might have a tough 10 months.
I do.
I also think, on a similar tip, Ryukyu might have a tough season coming up, because I think, just very simply, the players that they've lost have been very difficult to replace. I'm not sure they've really been able to replace them effectively at this point. Yamaguchi, I mean, yeah, I don't really see that they are better than last season. Probably more of the same can be expected from them, I feel. Very, you know, attractive and direct style, but too many holes probably defensively. I don't know, what do you think of this group? I don't really see any outstanding team.
Yeah, I think the theme of this J2 is, seems like the teams are weaker than last year. If I look at Kanazawa, excuse me, sorry, I should have muted that. I know. If I look at Kanazawa, they finished 11th last year, which is a really good performance from them, but they scored under 60 goals last year, which is not so bad, but they've lost three forwards who contributed over a third of those goals, and I don't see that they've been able to replace those kind of players. They obviously lost Norimichi Yamamoto, who moved to F Marinos. I think it might be tough for them this year. I think still got some good midfielders there, but if you can't score goals, then you're going to have some serious issues, I think. And I think they might be a team who people kind of might not expect to be in a relegation battle, but I think they will be, not necessarily in a relegation battle, but I think they'll be around 17th and 18th or 19th as the season comes to its kind of conclusion. Probably, with apologies to Jeff, yeah, I think Ryukyu might find themselves in that situation. So I think it all depends on where their goals come from. And I think if Takumarabe comes in, and I think if he does well, if he acts as their talisman, as their focal point, I think they might be okay. But I don't know. It's no one's fault, but you can't keep losing your best strikers. Like, they lost before their J3, before their J2 campaign started last year, they lost Yuta Togashi and Kazuki Nakagawa, and then they brought in Koji Suzuki, who left after scoring a load of goals, and then Satoki Uejo took over, and now he's gone to Fajiano Okoyama. You can't keep having all these goal scorers and just keep replacing them. It doesn't work like that, and I feel that unless Abe can kind of recreate some of his former glories, I think they're going to have a pretty rough time, FC Ryukyu, to be quite honest. I think we spoke a little bit about Tokyo Verde last night. I think they'll be a mid-table team again. I'm not really on the Yoshito Okubo and Leandro bandwagon. Nagasaki as well. I think when you lose your best player, which Hiroto Goya was, it's tough to recover from it. I put in my preview, I'll just read it verbatim. Can Victor Ibarbo score 25 goals in J2? Maybe, but I wouldn't stake much money on it. And I think that's where the issue lies. I think that kind of if you expect Nagasaki to be better and to improve on last year, you would have to assume that someone is going to replace Hiroto Goya's goals, and I don't see that happening. And so maybe this other Brazilian they've brought in, Luan, I think came in from a Russian club, I might be wrong about that, but I don't see Nagasaki making strides forward, and I don't see Tokyo Verde making strides forward, and I actually think Ryukyu, probably Yamaguchi as well to a certain extent, as well as Kanazawa, will be looking down as opposed to looking up, I would think, this year. I want to get your views on Machida, because they've had an eventful year, really. They got rid of Naoki Soma, they brought in Ranko Popovic, they brought in some Eastern Europeans, and they brought some good young players in. What do you see from Machida this year?
I think we can predict that it will be more interesting than 2019, when it was all kind of fairly drab and flat. Whereas the Naoki Soma project, I think it was sort of evident from maybe even late March, April, Golden Week onwards, that was kind of coming to its natural end, and they collected enough points and played well enough not to be relegated. But it was touch and go until the very last couple of weekends. That they would be embroiled in that kind of bottom two situation, which, considering how they'd done the season before, was a pretty shocking decline, certainly in terms of points and league places. I'm not sure about performances, really. The it's interesting that their kind of reaction to that has been to let Naoki Soma go, but bring in a kind of very familiar face in Ranko Popovic. I'm kind of... I don't know. I think it's always a bit tricky to go back to a club where you've had success and been well liked. You know, you run the risk of jeopardising that, don't you? But even Naoki Soma, that was his second spell at Machida, wasn't it? So they have previous for this. They have previous for previous.
Previous for previous. And Naoki Soma's actually landed on his feet, right? Because he's now a coach at Kashima Antlers, I think.
I actually saw him in the... I was watching the highlights of their ill-fated ACL game against Melbourne Victory, and I saw him... farting around in the technical area. So he's perhaps that's a good you know, win-win for everybody. I think his time was very much up at Machida. I think with Machida it's difficult to predict. I think they will be better again than last year, but I don't know by how much. Ranko Popovic obviously knows the club, knows what's expected, but again, some of the players that are coming in are young and unknowns or foreigners, open brackets, exclamation mark, close brackets. So there's just too much of an unknown quantity there. I would add that Machida might be slightly disadvantaged by the fact that the back stand, so the stand down the length of the pitch, not the main stand but opposite there, is closed for next season, or certainly at the start of the season, for renovation.
Yeah, it's the stand that you can see from the TV camera, right?
That's a much better way of expressing it to the listener. So you'll see just a sort of building site scenario there, I think, probably for most of the season, if not all. It might be a bit of a stretch to say that all that will influence what happens on the pitch, but I don't think it's too far-fetched. It's quite an open, low sort of bowl of a stadium anyway. So I think that definitely will add to kind of the atmosphere will be lost as a result of that, certainly, and crowds will be lower, I think, too. So that could be something as a kind of an off the pitch factor to take into account as well. I think they'll be okay, but I'm not expecting I'm not really expecting fireworks. I mean, I can't get excited about Stefan Šepović and Alan Masovic because I just don't know enough about them. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I think like we mentioned before with Avispa Fukuoka and Hasebe bringing in known quantities, it's like Machado have gone the complete opposite route. They brought in people that kind of I know nothing about, basically. I know they're good. I know they've got some good young players, and then this Leo Takai from Gamba Osaka is really highly thought of. But yeah, Šepović and Masovic, yeah, I think they'll miss Romero Frank as well. But I don't know. Like, they'll do well to be worse than last year, and I don't think that'll happen. I'm not sure how good they can be, but probably not as bad as last year.
Sorry, Kamen Togashi left as well.
Kamen Togashi's at, I think he's at Nagasaki now.
Okay, so he's going. And Ryohei Hayashi, he was on loan at Machida at the tail of last season, gone back to Verdy.
So he's back at Tokyo Verdy, yeah.
So it's all change up front for 2020 for them.
Yeah, it is. Which brings us on to the bottom of the table. We spoke about Gunma last night's pod, and we spoke a little bit about Giovanni Kitakyushu as well. I think at the bottom of the table, it's very difficult to look past maybe Ehime and Tochigi SC. I think we'll take one team each, John, and I'll give you the choice of who you want to talk about out of Ehime or Tochigi.
Yeah, well, I'll talk about Tochigi then. I think, unfortunately, they will have learned the lessons, I think, from a very attritional and a tough campaign last year. But unfortunately, I don't think they've been the lessons that they've learned, probably not budget-wise, means they can't really act on them. Mm. So they're stuck, I think, with, again, a kind of pretty uninspiring roster, although they still have Kazuaki Tasaka as the coach. And yeah, they seem to be relying on bringing in veteran players who, even if I rated them highly in the past, I'm not sure how much they can add. Now, I mean, Kyoto obviously have got experienced players, but I think when we use the word veteran, it's like that's like the next level up, isn't it, from experience? Yeah. It's like so experienced that they should really be telling somebody else how to do it rather than still doing it themselves. And yeah, you mentioned a couple of the good young players have gone to Tokushima. It's hard. I think even if you didn't know anything about the J-League, if you just looked at their squad from last season where they finished and looked at the squad again for this year, an algorithm would predict that they would struggle. So I'm not pulling up any trees, but I think it's going to be tough for them. No Hennick as well. Relying heavily on him, I think, was already a sign that the squad was quite thin. He every time I watched him, he was playing up front.
He was playing everywhere, yeah.
Desperate for somebody to create havoc in the other team's penalty area. So, yeah, I mean, you can't really say anything other than Tochigi are going to struggle. They might struggle more than last year. They might struggle slightly less, but it's not going to be a... it's hard to imagine them being any higher than the top... any higher than the bottom six or seven, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I feel the same way about Ehime as well. I think... we spoke a little bit off air about kind of how they reminded us of Gifu in that their time is coming, we think. You can't constantly be down the bottom of the table and just pick up three or four wins at the end of the year and just kind of ease away right at the end. And I think that this year they've lost the theme continues. I think they're weaker at this point now than they were at the end of last year, and they weren't in a very good position last year either. So they lost Yuta Kamiya to, god damn you, Kashiwa Reysol. You just keep signing all these fucking good players from J2
teams. They're like Chelsea. They're sort of Chelsea, Real Madrid they now. They've got, you can't possibly need all these players.
Jesus. Yeah. Kasia, yeah, so Kami
as
got,
well.
He's just got a yeah, Kami is gone. He was the basically the only creative player last year. Played all across the front line, but was really kind of their main kind of number 10. He was playing in the hole behind Yoshiki Fujimoto, and he created chances, he gave players other space. I think they'll really miss him. I think they'll also miss Takashi Kondo. Like, he's moved to Omiya. He's a bit of an unheralded player, but he did a lot of work and was really good at pressing on the right hand side, and I think he'll leave a gap. Hideyuki Nozawa, ex-Gifu and now ex-Ehime, because he's moved to Vanfori Corfu. I mean, they've brought in Shigeru Yokotani, who should be decent for them. Kazuhito Watanabe, I think will be a good signing, because he's so versatile. You stick him in the midfield, you stick him in the centre of defence, and he'll do a really good job. But yeah, I think that this squad isn't as good as the one that they had last year, and the one they had last year finished 19th. And I think the fact that the two teams that have come up from J3 are better than the two teams that went down from J2 last year, I think gives Ehime and Tochigi in particular a very difficult outlook, because there won't be any kind of free passes this year, I don't think. And I think for Ehime and Tochigi, it's going to be a kind of a long old slog this year, I feel.
Just piggybacking slightly on that, I think the obviously we're talking about two different teams, but they're going to have a similar problem in that I don't really see any good dribbler left in either squad. There isn't someone who can carry the ball across long distances vertically or horizontally along the pitch. Like, that was my favourite thing about watching Kamiya last year for Ehime. So he could kind of glide with the ball.
Yeah.
And carry it fairly effortlessly, you know, slalom through challenges and things. That is not essential to be successful in J2. You know, there are one or two other teams higher up the table that don't really have a dribbler in the classical style. But I just look at how I would set the teams, these two teams, up to play. It's like, how are you going to get the ball effectively forward from defence to your strikers? Long balls is going to be the only way they can do it, I think. And that is going to make their games very attritional, and it's going to mean they're just not going to score that many goals.
Yeah, I can't fault that. I just think that I think both teams were bad last year, finishing in 19th and 20th, but they on paper their squads look worse, and so just kind of objectively, it's really difficult to be positive about them. And yeah, I don't know. I don't see either of these teams kind of finishing outside the bottom four this year. Mm-hmm. I know, we just to round off, John, I know we spoke quite in detail about Gunma and Kitakyushu last night. Just very briefly, if we can, let's try and kind of outline the ways we think that Gunma and Kitakyushu will have a positive effect on the league.
Yeah, I think, again, this is repeating stuff that we talked about last night, really, but I totally agree with you. I think Gunma and Kitakyushu are better than the teams they've replaced in J2 from last season. Kitakyushu, of course, have this the bonus of having one of the best stadiums, probably, outside of J1. And one of the newest, the Mikuni World Stadium, which away fans are going to love visiting. And I think what will help Kitakyushu is they're not moving into the new stadium and starting their kind of J2 campaign there. They're in now, and they've had their sort of teething troubles at that ground. And now they're ready to sort of go for it, I think, from a pretty good base. And yeah, I think again, there's enough experience in the Kitakyushu team of players that have played in J2 before, and yeah, Gunma have got also Genki Omai, Iwakami, Miyasaki, Uchida, no problems at all. I think stepping up and adapting to J2. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think just to kind of mirror what we spoke about last night, I think like Gunma have undergone somewhat of a revolution, and I think that they've understood that this year the playing field is a lot leveler, if that's a word, than it has been in the past. And I think they feel that if they bring in these kind of experience but not over the hill players like Omai, like Iwakami, Miyasaka, Uchida, those kind of players, I think that they've correctly assessed you have to speculate to accumulate, and I think that's what they've done, and I think that's what they will do. I think they will accumulate points. I think a safe mid-table finish is very much on the cards for them, and I think Kitakyushu as well. I think Gunma are powered by the players, but I think Kitakyushu are powered by the manager. Shinji Kobayashi is a very good manager who specializes in promotions. They've managed to keep the majority of the players that they had last year. I know they've lost one high profile player in particular, I think it's Shuto Kitagawa, who played really well on his loan from Montedio Yamagata, but they've made some very shrewd signings as well. And I think that they are in a good position to kind of, I don't think they're going to go gangbusters and just finish top of the league, but I think they'll finish somewhere between 17th and 13th. And I think despite what you might hear at all these kind of introductory press conferences that, oh yeah, we're going to go for promotion and this, that and the other, I think a finish anywhere between 17th and 13th would be a very, very respectable and very acceptable result for Giravanzi Kitakyushu. And like you said, supporters are going to love going to the new stadium. It's not new anymore, is it? It's just their stadium. It's only 10 minutes walk from the local Shinkansen stop, and yeah, I think they've got, I think it'll be good times down at Mikuni World Stadium this year. I think we've touched on every single team, John. I think we've done really well in that. Are there any other kind of final thoughts that you want to put forward before we wrap up?
Not really, but I think very quickly we should just mention that there was a lot of criticism of the promotion playoff format from last season.
Oh, yes.
The J-League chairman, Mitsuru Murai, sort of solemnly promised to kind of take that on board and look into maybe changing the format. We don't need to go into the ins and outs right now, I don't think, Stuart, because we'll have a chance to do that during the course of the season, perhaps more at the business end. But yeah, basically the league announced pretty quietly, I think last week, that the format's not going to change this season. So we have the same system of home advantage for the third and fourth place team. They only have to draw to get to a final. They only have to draw that to get to the next round, and then they have to visit the J1,
yeah,
16th place J1 team and the J1 team, and that's just so a kind of I don't know if we talked about this at the tail end of last season, but that last kind of climactic Shonan game against Tokushima was just kind of a bit flat.
Yes,
when it finished, because it was a draw, but that meant one team could celebrate basically getting out of jail after having a bad season, and another team that had excelled all season had actually done really well and drawn a game away at a team from a high division, but that was a failure, so they were disappointed. It just felt kind of I know a lot of fans don't like playoffs just in principle. I'm okay with the playoffs, but I do think the format that they have now is not optimal. But I'm annoyed with the league because they sort of intimated that they shared that view.
Yes.
And would do something about it, whereas I think it would have been more morally pure just to say, yeah, that's just how it is. It's a little bit like when the J1 switched to the two-stage system. which fans hated and demonstrated furiously that they didn't want, but were told that they did want it and they were wrong.
Yeah.
But then as soon as a TV company wanted to pay 10 million yen to have a single stage, oh no, actually, it turns out you guys are right. You want the single stage. And it was handled very badly. And I think, you know, we're in this kind of social media PR savvy age. It constantly surprises me that very professional organizations get this kind of thing so horribly wrong. I don't know if you want to comment before we wrap up.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I thought the show that Tokushima put on and the reaction from the fans of all clubs really showed that it was an unfair situation. But you know, I think J1 clubs, I have no basis for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think J1 clubs have had a word and said, no, we want to keep it as it is because it greatly favours us, and like it gives us a get out of jail free card, more or less. And so it's disappointing. It's not overly surprising, because I think J1 clubs want to keep their J1 status as much as possible, which is understandable, I suppose. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to this topic plenty of times during the year, especially when we get down to the business end and start to look at the actual playoff teams and playoff implications. But that's a long way in the future, John. I think
thank God.
I'm sure we'll revisit this conversation again. But hey, listen, so we've got a long season of J2 football and J3 football coming up, and so we just wanted to give everyone a good J2 preview. If you take this podcast in conjunction with the one we did last night and the written preview that's up for the Patreons, I think it'll give you a decent overview, right?
I totally agree. A good hard preview, just what the doctor ordered.
Precisely, as a welcome to February. So we'll leave it there. John, thanks for jumping on last night and this morning. That was an interesting morning dynamic to the podcast. But thanks again. We'll reconvene probably next week sometime, and I'm sure we'll have other stuff to talk about then. But in the meantime, have a good week, and I'll speak to you soon. All right.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Same to you. And thanks again to the listeners, especially the patrons. We really appreciate all the support we get. It makes it all worthwhile.
That goes for me as well. If you do get a chance to donate or subscribe, that would be really good. It would help us produce more content. And there are things in the pipeline we have in store for the Patreon. So that kind of stuff will be coming soon. In the meantime, enjoy your week, and we'll speak to you next week. But until then, goodbye for now.